Three, two, one.
Hello.
Hello.
I really hope our producer Spike keeps in what we just did.
No,
welcome to We Are History. I'm Angela Barnes, and I'm here with
I'm John O'Farrell.
Yay! Now we are continuing our theme of doing topics that are on the primary school syllabus, just because it means there's really easy books out there for us to read and understand. It's because we thought lots of parents are homeschooling at the moment, so if we maybe do some podcasts that might help them understand what their kids are doing for their history work.
This is a national service.
It is a national service, John, and I expect an MBE at least.
I turned down my MBE.
Yes, John, of course you.
Yeah, and the knighthood. So, I turned them all down. I mean, to be fair, when I turned down the knighthood, I did say that my six-year-old daughter in a princess fairy dress probably wasn't allowed to give them out. But
oh, bless.
I'm going to be leading on this one, aren't I, Angela?
You are indeed, John. And I'll tell you why you're leading on this one, John. It's because, hands in the air, I've really tried. I've done the reading. I've done my homework.
Good.
But I'm a modern history fan. You know that about me.
You are. There's not much Cold War espionage in this one.
Not a lot of Cold War espionage in this. And I just struggle with this period of British history because, I mean, I know it's important and I do know the basics, but when it gets to the details, I'm just, boring. I shouldn't say that at the beginning.
I'm about to start doing my talk and Angie's yawning already. It's like, thanks a lot. I feel so supported.
We are doing the Roman invasion of Britain. Now, I am excited about the podcast, John, because I know if anyone can make this interesting, it is John O'Farrell.
Now the pressure's on.
I know that. And it's not fair that I'm saying that. I think what it is, for me, I like sort of social history. I like to know what the working classes were up to when things were going on. And obviously, this is a period where
before
there's
the
not
Industrial
much
Revolution.
Written history. Before the Industrial Revolution.
Before the internet.
It's a period of history where, you know, archaeology is basically what we've got.
Yeah, where we've got Tacitus.
Some text.
Yeah. Well, anyway, look, I've done a lot of research.
I've just put my caveat.
I have worked hard on this one, Angela, and I've done a lot of reading. I have read Asterix in Britain. So I am now an authoritative. Did you ever read the Asterix books when you were young?
My cousin James had all the Asterix books, but I never really. I used to occasionally pick one up.
I was mad on them.
Look,
was the first, in fact, Asterix in Britain was the first one I ever got. I remember laughing out loud at it when all the legionnaires get drunk. Legionaries, I mean. In that one, if you remember, Obelix goes to a rugby match and he decides to take rugby back to Gaul. Getafix the Druid gives the English
that,
a new
Getafix. Is that really? It's
yeah. They're all stupid.
You're a drug
puns.
Dealer.
They're all.
I knew they were all puns, but I didn't know there was one called Getafix.
Well, I suppose, yeah, maybe that is a. I hadn't thought about it like that.
Only now am I getting that.
John? I'm 112. He gives some herbs to the English. So he's a drug dealer.
Drug dealer.
The herb is called the final frame. What's the herb called? Tea. That is how the British got tea from Getafix the Druid in Asterix in Britain. So that's the end of our podcast this week. Thanks for listening. Yeah, so anyway.
I've been wrong. I can get aboard this Roman stuff. Sounds fun.
So according to that source, I grew up thinking that it was Caesar who invaded Britain because he does in this.
Julius Caesar,
yeah. But historically, it's true. He did turn up in England with a great big army. But the Romans didn't conquer Britain that early. He did a sort of recce. He came over. He came, he saw, he went back home again.
But they did, they sort of turned up, he turned up, but they did sort of form relationships, right?
Well, no, I mean, he did actually go to war with some of the Celts in southern England because they think that the British Celts had been assisting the Gauls of northern France in their war against the Romans. Caesar thought, well, I'm going to go over there, crush those British Celts, and then I won't have to worry about that anymore.
I mean, to the Romans, though, Britain was, I mean, because it was across water from the rest, it was sort of a wild, magical, distant place.
Yeah, I mean, if you think it's right on the edge of the world, really, Britain, as far as the Romans were concerned. When you think back then, the centre of the universe was Rome or Alexandria or, you know, the Mediterranean, for the wild, cold lands of England were like this sort of forgotten
wild
corner
outlet,
of the world, really. There be dragons. Yeah. I mean, Iron Age Britain was populated by Celts, as I said. They had long beards, painted their bodies, believed in the power of the stars and herbs. They're basically a bunch of hippies, Angela. So, you know, the Roman army's not going to have to worry too much about them. We have lots of archaeological evidence of the Celts. There's a rather splendid Iron Age shield that was recovered from the Thames in Battersea from around this period.
I was
going
to say, was it covered in shit?
That was last week's podcast. Probably was anyway. An Iron Age warrior threw it in the river. I thought, I'm not going to need that. And a week later, the Romans bloody turn up. So
if your job title is warrior, probably keep hold of you.
Hang on to that. I would have thought. Yeah. So Julius Caesar turned up in 55 BC.
BC.
Yeah, it's weird living in BC, wasn't it? Counting the years backwards. That would have
been... Yeah, how did they keep track?
It was like, I'm confused with this system. What is BC? Yeah, should we wait?
What?
I'm so excited to find out what the C stands for. When we actually get to 0 C.
In another 50 years, we'll know.
It's BC years... Well, it's before. The B stands for before something beginning with C, obviously.
Oh, dear.
In fact, that would have been 699 in the Roman calendar, because they dated everything from the foundation of Rome, or when they imagined Rome was founded. Although they didn't really name their years in the way that we do. They named them in the year of the consulship of Crassus and Pompey. So each consul served for a year, and that's how they named their years. Have you fallen asleep there, Angela? Yeah? Are you still awake?
Yeah, pretty much. No, I'm on it. Look, I've got catch up. So you've got Julius Caesar. He's fighting a war against the Gauls in northern France.
Yeah.
They're getting assistance from their fellow Celts in what's now Britain, on the other side of the Channel. So he's like, right, I need to crush them, show these Gauls I'm in business.
So the British Celts, a bit of detail here, you'll like this.
Sorry, that's my...
Tina is going mad about this again. So a bit of detail for you, Angela. The British Celts fought the Romans bare-chested. The French, they went into battle stark bollock naked.
Wow.
Can you believe that? I mean...
That's just asking for it, isn't it?
I mean, feel a bit self-conscious, if I'm honest. I mean, if you would think the Romans charging at you with armour and leather plates and metal all over him and a helmet, I'd be shuffling forward, my hands covering my privates.
You've got one hand there.
It's like, oh.
Where would you put your shield,
And when
John?
You turn around, exactly, you turn around, you put your hand, other hand over your bum crap, you've got nothing to fight with.
Romans parking their bikes in you.
That's so French, terrible. Isn't it? The French is like, I fight naked, I fight with no clothes on, it's natural, what's the problem?
I've got nothing to hide.
So, Julius Caesar, maybe he just came over here to fight some people with some trousers on anyway, but he came over with the wrong boats.
From the Channel. Oh, well, you know what happened there, don't you?
What?
Chris Grayling must have given the contract to one of his mates or something.
That's what it was. It was like, they know nothing about cross channels, but... He's a mate of mine. He gets all the government money. Yeah,
so it would have been quite a different voyage for them, wouldn't it?
Yeah, they're used to the Mediterranean with a sort of tidal change of a few inches and the massive tides of the Channel. So he had to abandon all that, and he came back a year later with 800 boats, especially built for the Channel crossing.
I say presumably different, not just like, well, one boat didn't work, maybe 800 will.
Yeah, no,
yeah, no.
These were all specially built, which must have been quite a commission.
Yeah.
Cross channel, you know, getting the chariots up, blokes with woolly hats going, move it up a bit, that's it, to me. And then everyone up to sea deck, try and get some seats together for the crossing. Visit the duty-free shop.
So he got as far as the Thames Valley, right?
Yeah, he pushed up through southern England.
Right. So where did they land? Do you know where
they landed in your manor, in Kent.
In my manor, in Kent.
Down in Kent, near the Isle of Thanet,
down
I think
in Kent.
It was.
Okay, Ramsgate, Margate and all that.
Yeah, just on that. Everywhere you look on the Ordnance Survey, there's a Caesar's camp, isn't there? There's always Caesar's camp. He must have camped in all over the place, I think, Caesar.
All I remember from Ordnance Survey is the triangulation pillars.
Oh, trig points, yeah.
No, that trig points with the triangle with a dot in, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then the pink triangles were youth hostels. That's all I remember.
Oh, well, they've all... I mean, it's always got the pile... This is the pylons. This is the sort of, archaeological site, and there's always Caesar's camp, and it's like he was camping all over the place. I think anywhere that there's a Roman remains, they said, I will call it Caesar's camp. I suppose, you know, he didn't have to worry about the no camping signs being the leader of the Roman Empire. It's like, who do you think you are? Well, I'm the supreme ruler of the entire Roman Empire. All right. Well, stay as long as you want.
As you were.
Now, in fact, he did meet some opposition, And, right. you know, he was driven back by sheer weight of numbers. And so it wasn't a defeat as much. He just decided, I'm not staying.
I didn't want to conquer here anyway.
I didn't want to conquer here. Stupid England. I'm going back to the mainland continental Europe.
So Britain at the time, we should say, is sort of quite tribal, right? You had these sort of various Celtic tribes in different areas. And each tribe would have their chiefs.
Yes.
And the chiefs in Britain, they were paying tribute to Rome.
Certainly in the south, right?
So they were within the Roman orbit. So essentially, did Rome have a sort of protection racket going on?
Yeah, it did. I mean, they had...
So you pay us tributes, we won't slaughter you.
You are within our domain. We don't occupy you, but you...
Yeah.
Just so that we don't come around and break both your legs.
Would there have been trade? Was that
loads of trade.
A reason to pay tribute?
Oh, absolutely.
So that's
they would have been getting stuff from Britain. Would have been the valuables would have been tin, copper, gold, silver, slaves, furs, marble.
And I think some of the chiefs started to take on quite a Roman look.
They did.
Sign of wealth or status.
Absolutely. You can't help noticing. Boss, that you're getting a bit sort of Romany. I'm pure Celt from the laurel on my head to the sandals on my feet. My plan is to integrate the Roman Empire and change it from within. Pass those grapes, would you? So, Angela's coughing on her tea at my impression of a Labour Party sellout. the upper classes. Quite fancy the sort of the civilization of Rome and the idea of central heating. Yeah, we'll have a bit of that, please.
Were they starting to speak Latin?
I suppose that became part of the language of the upper classes that they would. Because there was a lot of, as I say, there was a lot of trade. Shortbread biscuits, you know, Johnny Walker whiskey, postcards with Diana on, all the usual things that we export.
Marmite,
yeah. Well, we love it, we hate it. But anyway, so Julius Caesar, for that 100 years after him, Britain became a sort of a mystical place. And it's like, oh, Julius Caesar couldn't even conquer it.
Wow. This wild place across the water.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Didn't Caligula at one point was going to?
That's right.
Wasn't he?
There's several plans to invade it. And it was like whenever a politician in Rome was in trouble or a leader in Rome was in trouble, it was like another military campaign will... turn my fortunes around. And you have to think, where else is there left to conquer? They didn't want to cross the Rhine. They didn't want to go to Iraq. That was a terrible idea. So they looked to Britain.
Glad you're admitting it.
On the edge of the map, and you know, Britain gained this sort of mystique and glamour as a place that Caesar had not been able to conquer.
So we're sort of a century on. We're in AD 43, and we have Emperor Claudius, who was... succeeded Caligula, is that right?
I can't remember. I was too young back then to remember it.
Were you?
Just.
And apparently he really needed a victory because he was seen as being sort of intellectually weak, even though he wasn't. I think the book I read described him as, said if he was around today, he'd be known as an eccentric.
Okay.
So he was seen as being sort of not well in the head, but actually he was just a different sort of thinker. Claudius.
Okay.
And what we might call not neurotypical, maybe.
Right.
And so he was facing this military revolt at home and he needed a distraction, he needed a victory.
Right.
And where better than the wild people across the water, right? Because it'll be that will show people that I'm a strong leader and that I'm. I deserve this position that I've found myself in.
So I'll invade Kent, where Angela's ancestors have an Iron Age sex shop.
It's always Kent, isn't it?
It's always
Kent. This is why I do think. This is why Kent has historically such a bad attitude towards immigration. I think it's because
the army's always came there.
That's just where invading troops always came. And I think it's in their sort of DNA to be suspicious of anyone coming across the channel.
Now you've got Nigel Farage sitting on the bloody cliffs
there shouting at the sea, fucking idiot.
Well, Battle of Hastings, Sussex. So they mixed it up a bit then. So let's change. Well, I suppose he came from Normandy, so maybe that was, Do you know what? When I was talking about J.C., Caesar, talking about the Isle of Thanet, I think this was the invasion that was at the Isle of Thanet. Because 40,000 soldiers turned up there. There was a massive battle at the Battle of the Medway. So that's around there, isn't it?
Right. I know the Medway well.
Yeah.
River runs through Maidstone.
2 days that raged. that battle.
Wow.
And the Britons were led by Caractacus, the son.
Oh, is that, now let me get this right, is that the fascinating witches who put the scintillating stitches in the breeches of the boys, who put the powder on the noses of the faces of the ladies of the harem of the court of King Caractacus? That Caractacus.
That's really impressive. What is that from?
It's, unfortunately, it's a Rolf Harris song, and I really wish it wasn't. But
oh,
I had the album
fan.
When
you're
I was a kid. I had the Rolf Harris children's song album.
I was going to say, I was going to
burn into my brain.
He's the son of Cynobeline, or Shakespeare's Cymbeline, as we all know in the play.
We've all read Cymbeline.
We all love Cymbeline. It's the most. We've all read that one.
Cymbeline. Great cracking read, mate.
I mean, just to quote Cymbeline. No, I can't.
Is Cymbeline the one with all the blood and guts?
No, that's Titus Andronicus.
Oh, that's Titus Andronicus.
Off the hands.
I remember going to, I went, when I was at school in the sixth form, I did theatre studies A-level, and we went to Stratford-upon-Avon, mm-hmm. and we got backstage tours at the RSC and
I
stuff.
Did that, yeah.
And they were doing a production at the RSC, doing a production of Titus Andronicus, and they showed us backstage where, and there was like a sort of alleyway had been created where the actors would come off stage, run through, and the backstage crew would just throw blood and guts
them
as they ran past. And when they ran back on stage, they were covered in blood and guts.
I think I saw that production because we were, being a drama student at university, we went to Stratford, and that was that production of Titus Andronicus. She came out with her hands all dripping with blood and her mouth dripping with blood because they cut her tongue out as well, don't they, in that play?
Yeah, yeah.
And she has to write with a stick in her mouth, who raped her. They write it in the sand. It's a lovely, lovely, happy play.
Lovely, jolly.
We thought this was a show we're doing for the primary school children could listen
children,
to.
Children, yeah. Sorry, yeah, forget Titus Andronicus.
Forget that altogether.
Entirely.
Yeah, so the battle went on for 2 days. There's no bridge across the Medway. So the Celts...
There is now, John.
Oh.
Several.
Really? God, it's
really
come on.
Really annoying one-way system in Maidstone across all the bridges.
That's it's really come on down in Kent.
Isn't it?
Bridges. Yeah, but the locals thought they were safe, you know, from the Roman army. But the whole Roman army swam across the Medway in full armor, and no one was expecting that. They'd had the Romans had their swimming lessons. They'd got their swimming in their armor badges.
And, a brick in the bottom.
Yeah,
of the pool. You've got to go in their armor and get it.
Well, I think things got particularly nasty when one of the Romans said, "I'm going wild swimming," and then a Celt said, "Well, in my day, that was just called swimming." And then it all bloody hell went loose. The British, I'm going to say British because they weren't the English, of course. Then there was no Angles. There were no. So it was the British Celts.
No. So yeah,
British pushed back to the Thames, and that's the next line of fortification.
11 British kings surrendered. 11. That's a lot of kings.
Yeah, it's a surplus,
isn't
it?
Have too many kings.
They need, one king would have been enough, I think. But
yeah,
you can't tell these Celts anything.
It wasn't really easy to be a king.
Maybe it was just tribal leader. They called them kings just to big it up a bit. But anyway, they got the surrender of 11 kings. They sent that now. They sent for Emperor Claudius to come over and accept the surrender. So they're all doing the fighting,
right?
And the emperor's like, right,
and now he swans in.
Yeah, but it can't have been quick, that. It's not like you text him and he's down the road. It's like, is it send a message to Rome or something?
It must have taken months.
You would have thought so. And then, but you know, it must have been worth it for the PR for him to go, he there accepted the surrender of the kings. Do you know how they impressed the locals, Angela?
I do, John.
Oh.
This is so they had a victory parade through Colchester.
As you do.
With elephants.
Elephants in Colchester.
Where did they get the elephants from, John?
Maybe the circus was in town.
So it must be. Because did they...
No, they brought the elephants over on a boat. So they must have had...
Well, yeah, a boat big enough for elephants.
For lots of elephants.
Also, the elephants... If Claudius was coming from Rome...
Yeah.
I'm really obsessed with this. Were the elephants in Rome and came with him?
I don't know if they were waiting the other side of the channel.
In which case...
There must
how
have been a
the
whole...
elephants get to Rome?
Just the logistics of it. There must have been the elephant department who are in charge of... victory praise with elephants.
Procuring elephants.
So there's some bloke who's like, oh, no, now I've got to take the bloody elephants on the ferry. It's coming, it's from on top. They want it for a parade in Colchester or something. So they must have had to row these galleys or sail these boats with bloody elephants on, all shackled. And they're elephant handlers and food for the elephants. It's quite an achievement if you think about it.
Yeah. I just want to know how the elephants... Did the elephants come via Rome? I mean, presumably elephants, what... African or Indian?
African, I would say.
So African elephants. So were they already in Rome? Did they have to wait for the elephants to get from Africa to Rome?
I think within the Empire, for gladiatorial purposes.
So they've been yeah. reading Elephants in Rome by this
well,
point.
Well, I'm not going to pretend I'm an expert on this, Angela. But my guess
I'm sorry, I'm just fixated on the elephants.
My guess is that elephants were used within the Roman Empire for ceremonial purposes. But they would have really impressed the British Celts, so they thought...
Impressed, stroke, terrified.
Exactly.
Could you imagine seeing an elephant for the first time as an adult?
Yeah.
You didn't know that was a thing?
No pictures of elephants back then.
No.
I think, perhaps we're putting too much stress on the elephants, if I may say so now. This historical podcast. Okay. I think...
I'm just trying to find the bits that interest me, John. It turns out it's the elephants.
So, you know, the elephants down Colchester High Street, still the most interesting thing ever to happen in Colchester, by the way. They were pushing westward, they were pushing northward. Was no man going to stand up to these Roman invaders, Angela? Was there not one British man brave and strong enough to unite the tribes and fight back? Angela's got her hand up. You at the back, Barnes. Was there a man?
No, there wasn't, because it was a woman.
Oh, that's very good. That's very good.
Well, are we going to talk about Boudica?
We're not going to talk about Boudica in part two, because we did a bloody podcast about her already.
Yeah, go listen to that.
Go and listen to that one.
Good.
But we'll take a
short... I like a fiery redhead.
We'll take a short break there to clean up after the elephant parade. And we'll come back and tell you a little bit about Boudica, but mostly about what happened when the Romans continued their war on Britain.
Hello and welcome back to We Are History, where we are making the Roman conquest of Britain fun, aren't we, John?
I'm interested in it.
No, it is. I'm being really mean.
This is globalisation. This is the first globalisation.
It is. You're right.
It's a big deal. Roman Empire.
So we got up to our friend Boudica.
Yeah.
And like we said, we've done an episode on that. So go and listen to that if you want to know what happened there. Her rebellion was the toughest test faced by the Romans during their entire 400-year occupation of Britain.
Oh, spoiler alert. You just told them that the Romans win.
Oh, no. We nearly led to them withdrawing from the island, though. Nearly did.
Okay.
As you'll know from when you listened to that brilliant podcast.
Oh, those guys are great, aren't they? I love that.
We Are History guys.
They're funny, but they make you think as well.
They make history. If only it had been like that at school, John.
Oh, the dry and dusty history we had. But these guys, they make it. It's interesting, but you know, there's a few smiles along the way. Anyway, that was around 60 AD, Boudica. And once she had been defeated, the bloody Romans, they carried on pushing north and west, like I said. They
weren't happy with just the south, were they? They weren't happy with the Midlands. They weren't happy with, you know, conquering Colchester
I think the first sort of barrier, there was a sort of line between the Severn and the Trent. So I'm doing a diagonal. Right. I'm doing diagonal sort of hands here on Zoom. But if you think about the big estuary, the southwest, you know, of Bristol right up to Hull, that whole bit of England is flat. It's easier to conquer, and you've got over the most of the rivers things. So, but they carried on pushing. They got as far as Carlisle in AD 72, putting down the bloody Roman roads, and all the local villagers was like, "No to Watling Street bypass. Save our common."
Swampy in a tree.
Swampy.
They had
ye swampy in ye tree. Yeah.
Swampicus.
And Anglesey, there was a big massacre at Anglesey, massacre of the Druids there.
So they'd gone right that far west.
Yeah, northern Wales. So, the mountains were hard. So the mountains of central Wales and the Pennines, that was obviously a much bigger deal. But they were putting their Roman roads all over the place, you know, service stations selling overpriced fry ups, disappointing eggs. Solid job. You must have eaten a few service
stations. Unless you go to, well, you know what the best service station in Britain is, don't you, John?
I don't know. Tell me.
T-Bay. Have you never been to T-Bay services?
No, where's that? Is that Roman? Is it named after Tiberius?
There will be people listening now who are going, John, just go to I mean, obviously not now, we're in lockdown, but you have to go to T-Bay services. Best service station in the country. Gloucester's a close second because they're run by the same people. But T-Bay services, it's like an independent service station.
Oh, that's what it should be.
Farm shop.
Not those bloody
Granada
things.
They brew their own ale. You would love T-Bay services, John.
But the thing is, I have to get the one that's on the route I'm going. That's the
But that's the one thing about... you do get a bit obsessed with service stations when
you're on the road, like
comedian, when you're on the road.
Yeah.
So I've got my favourites, and I've got the ones that I'd rather hold on to a wee and wait till the next one because they're that bad. you know.
So this was very much what the Romans were talking about as they were going through. They said, well, let's conquer the bits that got better service stations.
Service stations, exactly, exactly. They went on the, it's worth paying the toll on the M6 just to go to Norton Keynes, you know.
This is very much recorded in the Roman texts.
So because Britain wasn't Britain as we know it today. It wasn't one unitary state.
Of course.
But, like we said, it was all these tribes and farmers who didn't have the supply lines of the Roman Empire. So the Roman Empire had these supply lines going back.
To Rome.
Across the water to Rome, yeah. Really. Where they could get supplies, they could get
food,
they could get supplies for battle, they could get anything that they needed. Whereas
the British farmers,
and also they were limited. The Romans could hunker down, right, and just stay there with these supplies. Whereas the British, they're farmers. They're like, I've got to get back to my land.
I've got to go back and fill out some subsidy forms.
Exactly. You know, yeah. I've got a harvest to bring in or whatever.
Which was
a really interesting storyline on the Archers.
Right.
Because it has been going
that long. Yes. Yeah. And also, of course, there were all sorts of local wars that have been simmering for decades. So if the Millwall fans...
These tribes didn't all get on.
No,
did
no.
They?
If you've got your Millwall fans and the West Ham fans, if they could all have a go at each other, then they thought, well, that's if I could get the Romans to beat up the West Ham fans, that's definitely worth it. So Caesar's maxim had been divide and rule, and it was never used so effectively as an invasion of Britain.
Yeah.
And the other thing, which is hard for us to get our head around now, is how these invasions took place over decades. They weren't like, not like weeks or months, like the Normandy landings in World War II. This is like, well, my grandson might finish this off. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. You start a campaign, but like you say, you've got to get from Rome to Britain on horses and boats or whatever, you know. Yeah. It's not something that's like they're not flying in and dropping bombs.
No, I mean, how the emperor is supposed to turn around his popularity with this war?
But I suppose that's why you'd understand like Claudius would go, I need this one campaign, which will be my life.
I know they don't like me now, but I'll have this place conquered in a quarter of a century.
Century, exactly, and that will be my legacy. And the next campaign will be someone else. I don't know. It's
So they put a new governor. Anyway, they put a new governor in Britain. He was called Agricola.
Oh, nice fizzy drink for farmers.
I think it's probably Agricola. Agricola, let's say
Agricola.
Like that. Agricola. I have some Agricola, please, farmer.
And I'm a pint of Agricola, no ice.
He gets a glowing write-up from the great Roman historian Tacitus.
Oh.
Just happens to be his son-in-law.
Right, okay, yes. And again, that sort of thing could never happen.
No.
Today, the press showing any sort of nepotism or...
He thought, well, I'm going to conquer Caledonia, or Scotland as we know it.
Mm-hmm. Claudius hadn't...
They hadn't got that far. You know, so
got
they,
that far.
You know, they just kept pushing north and thought, right, well, these guys are still marauding over the border and saying that Hogmanay is better than Christmas and all those things. So Scotland was... It wasn't called Scotland because the Scots... At that point, lived in Ireland, which is confusing. It was the Picts. They lived in Northern Ireland, so the Picts lived in...
The Picts.
It's all very confusing, especially if it's in Latin, which makes it even harder to work out.
Are the Picts the ones that paint themselves blue, or is that...
I think that's actually...
Everyone painted themselves blue.
I think that's in that bloody film, William Wallace and Gromit.
Oh, that's right, yes.
That's all sort of made up.
I did a joke in What the Week last night, John, that you'd like, but I don't know if it'll make the edit, so I'll tell you it now.
Yeah.
It was, you know, there's a new vaccine that they're making in Scotland called Valneva.
Right.
I said they should call it Valneva Take Our Freedom.
Anyway, if I wasn't supping my tea, I would have laughed more loudly. I thought you were going to say they deep fried it or something.
No, I'm not that basic, John.
No, that is route one, wasn't
clever.
It? Clever. Really? No, yeah. They'll never take our freedom. Well, that should make the edit. I hope it will make
it. I hope it does.
Tacitus has this Pictish leader, Galgacus, saying to his troops, they make a desert and they call it peace. You might remember that line. It's in Gladiator. And Ridley Scott has his line being said by Connie Nelson to Russell Crowe. So was it Connie Nelson? Was it the Pictish leader, Galgacus? You decide who's right.
I'll be honest, I've never seen Gladiator.
Oh, it's quite good, actually.
I actually thought you said dessert and they call it peace. They make a dessert and they call it peace. And I thought, well, that makes sense because I make peace with anyone bringing me a pudding.
I think it's a great line there, they make a desert and call it peace. Because the whole sort of idea of, you know, with empires bring peace. Yeah, but by killing everyone. The justification for the British Empire was it stopped the war in India, so of the various things. It's like, well, it's fine if you've killed everyone. So I think it's a perennial sort of answer.
It is. I'm sorry, I trod on it.
The desert pun was worth it. The dessert pun, sorry. There they make a dessert and they call it peace. Maybe that's what he said.
Maybe that's what he meant. Yeah. So have a jam, roly poly, and we'll all be friends. That's how I read it.
The Romans, if I could continue, you at the back.
Sorry.
They continued right up
into school. This is exactly what this feels like. A lesson at school, and I'm
there will be a test. There will be a test. They went all the way up at Eastern Scotland. Do you think of Hadrian's Wall? Do you think they didn't get... But no, they went all the way up. Mm. They went past modern-day Aberdeen, almost to Inverness.
Wow.
Then they continued round the coast by boat, over the top of Scotland. But, of course, the Highlands proved very difficult to occupy and supply. And so in the first century, it wasn't until the Emperor Hadrian in the 100s that they withdrew and they built a great big wall. And right. That's what we know as Hadrian's Wall.
Hadrian's Wall.
All those people who worked hard on it, they said they showed it to Hadrian. We've been labouring on this for 10 years, sir. So he goes, yeah, well, I think we should call it Hadrian's Wall. Right.
What?
Right. Well, you weren't actually here whilst we were building it. You know, I mean, some of the lads have got quite a few suggestions. But, okay, Hadrian's Wall.
Mike's been here from the beginning. We should call it Mike's Wall. That's only fair, isn't it?
Do you know where the wall ends?
Angela? I don't, actually.
Ends at Wall's End.
Oh, yes, that does make sense.
Yeah, well, they saw that on the map. They thought, well, that's where we should aim for.
Yeah. They found remains of North Africans at Hadrian's Wall.
I know, that's amazing,
what
isn't it?
What a posting that must have been. So you've got...
Yeah.
That shows that there are black people in Britain going back 2,000 years. I mean, we've talked about this on previous podcasts.
Yeah, yeah.
This sort of idea that black people have only been in Britain since the 50s.
Yeah, I don't know what the Latin is for... But where are you from? Yeah, but it's amazing. Imagine if you grew up in the deserts of North Africa in the sunshine and the heat, and suddenly you're stuck on some freezing cold wall in the Scottish borders. That must have been a pretty rum posting, wasn't it?
Bit of a culture shock. Not a culture shock. What's the word?
Yeah, culture shock and a sort of...
Well, yeah, culture shock, I suppose. And
Everything shock. They did try, actually, moving the border further north. So you've got Antonine's Wall, which is on the Firth of Clyde and Forth. So that's sort of, you know, the rivers of Glasgow and Edinburgh. Mm. Narrower a bit of Scotland, but it didn't work. And they fell back to the approximate English border, which has ended up actually being the limit of the Roman Empire. And the last...
So it never went past that, did it?
No, the last attempt of any expansion really in the Roman Empire. So Scotland really, well done, Scots, you stopped the Roman Empire in their tracks. They never tried to expand any further after that.
They met Rabsy Nesbitt and went,
exactly.
Turn back.
Ireland, they never even bothered. Eventually, they had all these different borders for England and all these different divisions. But eventually, they divided it into two. Do you know what they called them?
I do. Britannia Superior and Britannia Inferior.
Now, Northerners, I don't want you to infer anything from the fact you were called Britannia Inferior. You know, just because the Southerners called themselves Britannia Superior, you shouldn't take anything from that.
Technically, though, wouldn't you think that Superior would be the one on top?
I think Superior was
They weren't necessarily looking at a map the way that we were.
That's true. They probably had it on its side. But apart from anything else, I think it was the size of the territory and the wealth
and just
of that
we're
territory.
Superior, John.
Maybe it's just the
I thought I'd say that.
Just say it's the better beer down south. Oh, we're going to get letters now.
Do you know, there was a lovely moment on Twitter last week. So I did Mot the Week with Maisie Adam, who's a brilliant comic. And she's from Yorkshire.
Yeah.
But she's from a very middle-class family. Like her, what was it her grandfather did? Something. He was like chief of police or something in the Yorkshire Ripper. Anyway, quite a middle-class family. Anyway, there was a bit in Mot the Week where we were sort of, me and Ed Gamble were kind of ribbing her about her accent, right? But we're all mates, you know, and it was all done in fun and it was fine. It made the edit. And some bloke on Twitter started giving it, these middle-class Southerners taking the piss out of the working class. And Maisie was like, I'm not working class, Angela is. You're the one making judgments there, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah. Because the accent.
But, you know, they just assumed that she's northern so she must be working class. Angela's southern, so she must be middle class. Like,
This is exactly why England got divided up into Britannia Superior and Britannia Inferior. But Britannia, both parts, was the most rebellious territory within the Roman Empire for the entire 400 years that the Romans were here.
So were these sort of tribal... They didn't go away, did they?
No.
They didn't stop being tribal communities and settlements.
Yeah,
so
it needed more occupying soldiers than any other province in the Roman Empire, per capita. Mm. Roman cities in England were fortified. Not the case in Gaul. The French were all like, oh, yeah, we give up, surrender.
Just shrugged, waved the white flag.
Yeah. But the British, a proud British, were like, we shall never surrender. So this proves we were the hardest. And as I say, Scotland.
Up yours, the laws.
Yeah, up, yeah, exactly. And the Scots even more so. So well done, Scotland. As I say, you know, the rest of it, too much drizzle. They're not going. After they conquered Britain, they thought, let's not go any further north. It's too much, too much rain.
They started remembering, oh, the Mediterranean is quite nice.
Yeah, why did we come here?
Why are we here?
This food
is terrible. Where we used to live.
The food in this service station is terrible.
Yeah.
You tried that tea one that Angela keeps going on.
They didn't get as far as Tea Bay. That's the problem.
Hello, I'm Ros Taylor with news of Oh God, What Now? The politics podcast that's never going to leave its voter ID at home. On Friday's show, it's 6 months until the US election and Donald Trump is stuck sitting on trial in a New York courthouse. Is he bulletproof or can Joe Biden turn around the polls? In the second half, it's local elections week, but we've steadily taken power away from local authorities. What if we gave it back? And in the extra bit for supporters, is there a right level of ruthlessness in politics? That's Oh God, What Now? With me, Ros Taylor, Raphael Baer, Hannah Fearn, guest Nikki McCann Ramirez, out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
So, local aristocracy did okay out of it all.
Yeah.
They built villas, had slaves, were basically sort of Neo-Roman.
Romanized, weren't they? Yeah.
Yeah. Buried their coins.
Yeah.
To be dug up 2,000 years later, yeah, John, didn't they?
There's always some bloke on the news, isn't there? There's always like, oh, a farmer on Local News West, a farmer has found a treasure. And you see the farmer, he looks really worried that he's going to have to give this to the local museum.
It's mine.
I hope I get to keep the cash. Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, when the empire was collapsing in the early 400s, a lot of the Gallic Romans crossed the channel and because it was safer here for the marauding Goths. And they came over here and buried their treasure, I think, hoping to come back to it.
Oh, so, really? So, marauding Goths just puts a picture in my head.
Yeah, yeah. No, they're all massive.
Running away
Marilyn
from
Manson.
A Marilyn Manson concert.
They all wore black. And they're all like...
I keep going off on a tangent here, but I saw a brilliant... I was at Reading Festival one year when Marilyn Manson was playing.
Yeah.
And it was full of these sort of goth emo kids.
Yeah.
And I was watching something somewhere else. And we turned around and it was raining. Really hard. So you saw all these goth emos obviously brought their mum's umbrellas. They also had these like floral umbrellas.
To stop the black hair dye running down their faces.
Stop all their makeup on it.
Yes, well, Britain was actually, as I say, a safer place to be. I mean, very hard to put a date on when the Roman occupation of England ends because it was such a sort of organic, you know, lots of them stayed.
Piecemeal kind of
But there
thing,
was a point in 410 when the Roman rulers of England sent to Rome asking for help. And the message came back, you know, obviously months later, saying, look to your own defences. And it's like, right, what does he mean by that then? Does that mean he's sending loads of armies to help us? Or we're fucked?
Yeah. What did that mean?
There was a gradual evolution of a society where more invasions came because there were no Romans to defend the villas and the cities that they had built whilst they were here during those four centuries. The Angles and the Jutes and the Saxons started to turn up. Weirdly, they started to build their settlements next to the Roman ones. Instead of using the Roman towns, they were, I don't know, maybe they thought they were haunted or something. They used to take up all the road, the bricks from the road, and build their houses with them. So that's why lots of the roads don't survive.
I wonder if it was seen as sort of superstitious, you know, to build on their settlements, maybe.
You think they would have used their sewers and their aqueducts and their, all that stuff, but they didn't. They built next to them, generally. And, you know, gradually Roman influence diminished. And in mainland Europe, you know, the languages were much more influenced by Latin than our own languages. We had much more Germanic influence, of course, and Germany wasn't occupied by the Roman Empire. Anything other side of the Rhine. In fact, it was the freezing of the Rhine in 409, which allowed all the marauding Goths to come over with their hair dye and their black eyeliner. So that's the Romans in Britain. Angela?
I've learned a lot, John.
Yeah.
Thank you.
My main sources for that were Roman Britain, A New History by Guy de la Bodiere. And David Mattingly wrote An Imperial Possession, Britain in the Roman Empire. Those are the books I looked
and
after
that. I read a book from the... You know, there's that series of books called A Very Short Introduction to...
Oh, yeah.
Lots of topics. They're really good little handbooks, actually. And I read The Very Short Introduction to Roman Britain.
Very good. Do you remember the...
It was very short.
You're probably too young to remember the scandal about Romans in Britain. Do you remember the
I
whole
don't
thing?
Remember that. 1982. So I was only... six.
Okay,
then.
I was at university doing drama, so it was quite a big thing.
Oh, yeah.
But it was a play at the National Theatre called The Romans in Britain, and it made history of its own, really, because it was prosecuted for gross indecency by Mary Whitehouse, the anti-sort of sleaze campaigner, because it featured a gay rape. But actually, it was a play about imperialism and about the abuse of power, and it felt quite relevant at the time in Northern Ireland.
And also, actually, if you remember back to our History of Swearing episode, in that book, Holy Shit, it was called, about the history of swearing, and that the way that the gay sort of male or male rape was used in Roman times as a kind of assertion of power, and you know, that's all covered in that book. It's really interesting, and so, you know, it was historically
accurate. No, it was, and it was a comment on it. I think it was a comment on Britain and Northern Ireland, but the case collapsed because Mary Whitehouse hadn't gone and seen the play anyway. She'd sent her lead her prosecutor to the National. He sat right at the back of the theatre, and when he claimed to have seen a male penis, he had to admit he couldn't really see very clearly. It could have been the thumb, someone's thumb. Which is a bit. If I was that actor, I'd probably be like, "Oh, all right,
all right, all right." Somewhat a baby's arm, maybe.
But anyway, the whole case collapsed. But it got a lot of publicity at the time, and it was the last. I think it was the last prosecution for gross indecency we've had in this country. Romans in Britain, do it as your school panto.
Yeah, do it.
Those gay rape scenes, but. Yeah, so the Romans, you know, they 400 years, they left a big impression on this country, but not as great as on continental Europe. Read Asterix in Britain.
I'm gonna. Sounds fun.
You know, don't bother doing Latin O level. It's a lot. It's a lot of hard work, and you don't need to do it to get into Cambridge anymore. I think that's why we were made to do it at my school.
Oh, really? Because that was what
that you couldn't get into Oxford or Cambridge without Latin O level, and then they changed that rule, and they said, "Oh, we're not going to bother with this anymore." So yeah, so but Latin is no longer the lingua franca of the world, except that bit.
Bravo!
On that bombshell.
On that bombshell.
On that gag, we'll leave you.
Thank you so well. Gag's a strong word, isn't it?
Yeah, that's probably overdue.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Please don't forget to follow us on Twitter at We Are History Pod and not at We Are History, the band that John keeps tweeting.
Keep sending us suggestions.
Send us suggestions and give us a review if you wouldn't mind. We would really appreciate
just,
that.
Just 5 stars and Uber. Nice. That'd be great.
5 stars and you know, that'd be good. Just bump us up the old ratings a little bit. That would be lovely.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
We will be back next week.
Next week. Bye.
Bye.